concentration of life improvement talents like resist disease, resist poison, improved metabolism, enhanced endurance, along with a few others. Despite the advantages, divine talents had a few weaknesses. Unlike their physical counterparts, they were magical, and thus could be rendered inert by anti-magic fields. And, if the Inquisitor were to fall out of Alita's grace, the goddess could simply take the talents away and regain the invested experience points, like Galio himself knew very well. Thus, while it was possible for an Inquisitor to become extremely powerful by increasing his stance in Alita's eyes without ever spending a single point, it was also possible he could lose it all in one day, if he were to displease the goddess. Not that any self-respecting Inquisitor should ever worry about that possibility. Those without sin had nothing to fear at all. Galio realized he had a sour taste in his mouth.
Keep going like this, and you'll end up as bitter as Zeki. Patience, he advised the former ranger. You'll gather enough experience points in time, and you can always devote yourself further to Alita's service and hope the goddess increases your powers herself. Then you'll be stronger than the average Inquisitor. Sadly, not all your ranger talents have a divine equivalent.
Alvedra clasped the arrowhead she kept on a string around her neck.
The problem is, I don't have that kind of time. My revenge has to come now, or Inric's hero shall deliver it for me. And praying for Alita's blessing seems plain wrong, you know. The matter between me and Kesset of Green is personal. It would be selfish of me to involve the light.
Galio bit his lip as silence extended between them. Alvedra hadn't been there for the Battle of Barova, but she had seen the ruins, and she remembered Edward Wright's deception while they battled Queen Amphoris and Hoya, along with Ione and Vasile. She knew nothing of the Mind Brood or Ione's true nature, so she blamed the village's destruction and all the Mind Brood's killings on the Dungeon Lord, and on the avian who had betrayed her to join him. Worst of all, Galio couldn't explain what had happened. Not without damning her and himself and all the village's survivors. As the ranger's zeal grew with every passing day, Galio's hope that she'd come to understand his reasons, and the reasons of Kes, diminished further and further. He suddenly felt very alone. Alvedra had been one of his first friends back when he had arrived in Steravos, and nowadays she was his only reminder of the years he'd spent as sheriff. And yet, the distance between them grew, with her being none the wiser.
Alvedra, I...
He searched his heart for answers, trying to find the courage to tell her something that would lift the burden off her shoulders. Perhaps even the truth? Shouldn't he trust her? She was an adult, and his apprentice, and certainly had a right to know. If only he were strong enough.
There's something I haven't...
She grew silent, her entire body tense.
Shh!
She urged him, raising a hand his way.
Listen!
Galio could hear nothing, except the sounds of the forest and the faint current of the river against the rocks. His hand reached for his longsword anyway, and he eased an inch of steel out of his scabbard. He felt very naked without his armor, laying forgotten inside his tent.
What is it?
The silence,
Alvedra whispered.
The birds grew quiet, and I swear I can see mist in the distance. But at this time of the year... But it can't be. The alarms and Seki's spells...
Trust your instincts, Galio said. You're a ranger. Those skills are part of you, and will always be. Use them in the service of the light.
The ranger swallowed and reached for her sword.
Then I'd say we're under attack.
She said gruffly.
There's black magic incoming.
It was as if her words had frozen the air in his lungs. As he gathered air to raise the alarm, one of Zeki's hawks dove like a falling star toward the forest and exploded in a circle of light that surrounded the treetops only a few hundred paces away. All around camp, the shrill sound of the alarms went off. Galio could see Zeki's stunned face as he squinted at the light of his own spell, pointing unerringly at the direction danger emerged from.
To me, cleric!
Galio ordered, his voice charged with authority. In a fight, there was no time for personal likes or dislikes, and both he and Zeki knew it. The old cleric grabbed his spiked mace and rushed toward Galio and Alvitra, his long gray whiskers shaking as he ran. Inquisitors poured out of their tents in varying degrees of undress. Galio noted with disapproval that most hadn't had the presence of mind to grab a breastplate or a helmet. Then again, neither had he.
"Victory has turned us complacent," he thought.
"What's going on?"
Zeki asked as he reached Galio. Like Alvidra and the third lookout, Zeki wore a breastplate and a helmet over his thick gambeson tunic. Protocol dictated full armor for lookouts at all times through their shifts, but in practice it was too cumbersome and most Inquisitors turned a blind eye to the rule.
"We're about to find out," Galio said.
It was incredible the way adrenaline cleared the mind. All his worries were gone, carried away by the wind. All his fears, gone. Only what was to come mattered.
"Ready your buffs! Cast at my signal! Golden stone carapace on me! Avenging grace on Alvidra! And prepare a salvo of holy bolts on my signal!"
"Got it!"
"Alvidra, switch to arrows. Ready an explosive one!"
At that moment, Hector, the third lookout, reached them. He was a young Haligian blonde whose beard needed a trim.
"You're to come at the front with me, kid!"
"Yes, sir!"
Hector said, his yell piercing the night like a bolt. Tendrils of mist spread out of the woods as the night grew colder and the light of the torches seemed to falter.
"Here we go,"
Galio thought, just as the first figures rushed out of the mist and through the underbrush. Eerie screams filled the air. The creatures floated inches above the ground, their arms extended toward Galio and the others. Their bodies were gray and transparent, with hair floating as if underwater, with their open mouths and eyes resembling dark graves.
"Spectres,"
Zeki uttered, stating the obvious.
"Spectres!"
Hector brandished his spear and took several steps forward.
"Abominations! Blemishes in Elisa's eye! I shall smite you all!"
The tip of his lance burst in a white light as if having grown suddenly forge-hot.
"Get back here, you idiot!"
Galio reached for the kid's shoulders and shoved him hard.
"Let them come to us! That's what the Circle of Respite is for!"
Hector turned with flared nostrils and showed his teeth, but stood his ground.
"Good. Wouldn't want the kid flogged for insubordination."
Letting the undead reach them was the best option, and not only because it gave time for the rest of the men to catch up. As long as the Circle's magic stood unbroken, the Spectres would have a hard time breaking the invisible barrier that protected the camp. And when they did, they'd fight severely weakened.
"How many?"
Galio asked Alvidra, who had the keenest eye of the bunch. She turned her head like a hawk, ready to draw her bowstring and launch an explosive arrow at a moment's notice.
"Just 5. Shouldn't be a problem."
Galio raised an eyebrow.
"Just 5?
That few specters wouldn't give pause for a single inquisitor. Then, a shimmering skeletal hand came out of the ground midway between the specters and the lookout's fire. The hand floated up, grasping at the empty air as if pulling the rest of its body by an invisible rope. A skull followed it with blazing green pinpricks of flame burning in empty eye cavities, along with a tattered shroud that swayed in the non-existent breeze.
"Wraith!"
someone screamed. Galio frowned.
"Is this the same wraith that appeared in Hoya? The diviners told us it had been destroyed."
A voice in the back of his head told him that there was something that didn't add up with that wraith. It looked wrong. But why? The undead abomination stood at its full height and regarded the Inquisitor with its terrible smile as its 5 specters rushed forward. And then it charged. To the side, away from the lookouts. Toward the back section of the camp. The one filled with non-combatants.
"Oh, dunghill,"
Galio muttered. All hell broke loose. Chapter 9. Despicable Heroics. The light from the magical hawk engulfed the forest.
"How long until they figure it out?"
Kes asked. She was covering her eyes with her forearm, protecting her sight from the sourceless daylight. It was fading, quickly, but its blinding surge had ruined the group's night vision. The Kuftars had still not recovered. Their eyes were more sensitive, and the spell had stunned them.
"Probably not long enough," Ed said,
squinting past the line of trees towards the camp, which was still hidden by the light's after-effect. He was surprised by how well the simple spell had worked on him. When it had gone off like a giant firecracker out of nowhere, he'd been sure the Inquisitors had launched an artillery shell his way. The light had stunned him and sent him sprawling down as if the surge had gone off inside his own brain. "Dungeon lords are vulnerable to the light's spells," he reminded himself. "Better not be hit by one again." Back in the haunt, he and his minions had pooled their knowledge about the spells and talents the Inquisitors would have at their disposal, and had been sure that none possessed a combat spell that worked at such long range. Since they were all still alive and unhurt, the spell hadn't been meant for combat. Ed guessed that it was an alarm variant on steroids, not only warning the Inquisitors of incoming danger, but also briefly stunning said danger and pinpointing its location. He knew that no plan survived contact with the enemy, but seeing how close they'd come to damnation chilled him to the bone. Thankfully, neither Alder nor Levy shared the Dungeon Lord's vulnerability, because otherwise the entire plan may have gone to hell. The witch knelt with her hands oozing black and purple energy which flowed around her. She was already hard at work raising the second wave of specters, which was probably a good idea, since the Inquisitors would make short work of the first five. Levy's spell was called Summon Specters, and she had learned it on her own by sheer enthusiastic research. Unlike necromancy, which worked only with flesh and bone, her witchcraft could summon the spirits of the dead, lay curses, and perform a bit of scrying. It was the Swiss Army knife of black magic.
"Rise, my beauties,"
Ed could hear her whisper.
"Heed my calling and spread terror among the living."
Maniacal rapture contorted her face.
"Yes,"
she exclaimed as five new silhouettes took shape among the mist.
"Yes, rise."
"Nothing about that incantation was part of the spell," Ed told himself. She was only doing it out of love for her trade.
Admirable, yet a bit concerning. Close to Levy, Alder held his flute to his lips and played a quick, eerie melody filled with jarring shifts in rhythm and tune. The surrounding air rippled with spent magic, his eyes were closed, and sweat poured across his forehead. The bard was earning his weight in gold, because his part in Ed's plan involved using almost all his magical arsenal at once. First, he had cast Minor Illusion to create a facsimile of Torst near Levy's specters, and then had used his bardic utterance, Bardic Images, to create five copies of the original Wraith Illusion. In total, the combo ate two spells and one utterance, but the result was worth it. Bardic Images created five indistinguishable copies of the original target. They were easily dispelled, but a powerful spirit rank wouldn't reveal them as a fake. Furthermore, these images were smarter than an illusion. They moved around on their own, designed to pull aggro away from the caster by tricking his enemies into thinking each image was the real version. As long as Alder kept the magic of his melody going, those five images would do their best to trick the Inquisitors into thinking each was the original Wraith illusion.
"Probably best that we don't overuse the combo," Ed thought.
Objectivity probably wouldn't like the concept of illusions copying illusions to deny the enemy a spirit contest. He wished he knew of a way to test the limits to which objectivity would let him go. Instead, the way the magic of Ivalis worked was a sort of honor system. He could bend the interpretation of the spells and talents' descriptions, but if he tried to break them, or went too far, he'd simply be deleted out of existence. No takebacks or do-overs. Magic and the scientific method, it seemed, didn't like each other.
"He can't keep going forever,"
Kes warned him. The light had faded enough by now that Ed could see the first image of the Wraith fly around the inquisitorial encampment, dodging bolts of light, arrows, and javelins as best it could. One lucky bolt made contact and caused it to dissipate into magical raindrops.
"Whoops,"
Alder said, stopping his melody for an instant. He took a deep breath and resumed playing. Another of his images flew out, bellowing dramatic threats in its otherworldly voice.
"Levy, more undead, please," Ed said.
He activated his evil eye. Technically, they were standing above a single-chambered dungeon he'd created as soon as they arrived. In fact, it had been that action which had prompted the blinding spell to fall down on them. As long as they were in the same dungeon, Ed could sense all his minions in a vague way, as if he had a dungeon sense that brought that awareness inside his head, along with other nifty details such as the right spots to build a cave and what to break in order to collapse one.
"The riders are waiting," he went on, "but the drones can't dig into the camp as long as the area is contested."
When heroes, inquisitors, or other powerful foes consciously controlled an area, it greatly hindered his attempts at creating a new dungeon there or expanding through tunnels, but it also established a clear limit to his dungeon sense, as a sort of magical ownership keeping him at bay. Not all of his enemies possessed this talent, but most of the magic users did. Instinctively, he knew that contesting an area was as simple as getting a group of living creatures in there. In other words, the easiest way to take a controlled territory was to get a couple of his minions there to throw the previous occupants out. Luckily for him, his spider empire had a lot of living creatures.
"Second image is down,"
Alder announced. His cheeks were reddening from the effort of keeping the utterance up.
"I think their leader is onto it."
Ed glanced up at the second hawk-like spell that still encircled the sky above. As he watched, the hawk dove at full speed in the opposite direction of the fight, toward the river. The shine that followed claimed the attention of most of the Inquisitors not fighting shades or wraith images. The dome of light turned the murky waters of the river into crystal for an instant and revealed dozens and dozens of horned spiders swimming in complete silence toward the camp. Screams ran as the Inquisitors bellowed orders and split their forces to deal with the new threat. An instant afterward, Ed's dungeon sense informed him that the camp was currently contested. His evil eye blazed as he relayed his will to the drones underneath him.
Smite!
Galio's sword turned into brilliant molten gold and struck the approaching shade with terrible intensity. The creature turned into grains of white light with such violence that it forced back the other two undead monsters. They hissed at him, but the golden sand-like armor summoned by Zeki's holy carapace protected the Inquisitor from the specter's drain endurance trait. An arrow hit one of them and the creature exploded. Hector handled the last one with three furious thrusts of his silver-infused spear, which bypassed the undead's resistance to non-magical attacks and destroyed it.
"Zeki!"
Galio called as he readied himself. Several more specters were headed his way from the forest.
"What the hell is that wraith doing?"
"No idea,"
came Zeki's answer as the cleric shot a holy bolt at the flying creature. The wraith dodged with a speed and agility that, Galio was sure, was impossible.
"Has it gone sentient?"
A sentient wraith was a very rare and dangerous phenomenon, the product of an almost impossible mix of circumstances. But wouldn't a sentient wraith know it was suicide to attack the Inquisition directly? It wasn't as if the undead monster was doing much. So far, it was content to do flying passes at the camp, screaming incoherently at everyone in sight. One lucky enchanted arrow struck it, and the wraith disappeared in a shower of mist. Just like that, gone like a common specter. Before Galio had time to close his mouth, the wraith reappeared, cackling like a mad cuffdar. Galio had the sudden certainty that he was being tricked. Then the second hawk guardian descended with a fury into the river. Galio turned to the surge of light and stared at a horde of chitinous creatures half-submerged inside the black, mirror-like water. Chitin. His nightmare was back at the forefront of his thoughts all of a sudden, and his soul froze in cold horror at the prospect of facing an army of mind broods. He almost dropped his sword and ran. Instead, he sprinted over to Alvedra, trusting Hector and Zeki to handle the remaining specters.
"Can horned spiders swim?" he asked the ranger.
Alvedra looked him over like he'd gone insane.
"What? Of course they can! They're arachnids!"
She shot another specter, then followed his gaze.
"Oh. Oh. Fuck!"
The first spider warriors had left the river and were charging at a group of bewildered inquisitors. Each spider had their backs completely covered in spiderlings, which rushed out onto the battlefield as soon as their adult counterparts touched the ground. Galio had never seen horned spiders use transport tactics before. As he watched, the spiderlings overran the surprised inquisitors by the shore before they had time to use their crowd control talents. In a blink, the spider warriors had them immobilized in strands of web. The cold fear in Galio's soul was taken over by a terrible, smoldering certainty. He knew the person responsible for this attack.
And those spiders are definitely contesting the circle of respite.
Hoping beyond hope, he turned to Zeki.
Your spell?
The cleric shook his head before returning his attention toward the wraith. He brought it down with another bolt, and the creature disappeared. This time, it didn't return.
An illusion?
But his spirit ranks should have resisted it. It was no matter.
They're mixing illusions along with their minions. Be careful! Damn it.
There was no time to lose. With a dungeon lord involved, it was impossible to hold his own without heavy-duty magic. Galio had seen Edward Wright fight before.
Alvedra, you're in charge, he told her. This is a dungeon lord attack, so I must make sure Master Enric knows to summon the heroes.
Alvedra knew him well enough to read his face, even in the middle of battle.
Ah,
was all she said, her expression inscrutable. Galio clenched his teeth.
Damn it all. Don't do anything stupid. The camp needs you to hold the line.
He wished he could tell her something more, make sure she'd listen to his commands, but the Inquisition needed the heroes right now. Still cursing, he turned and ran toward Master Enric's tent. He could see the spider warriors skittering in the dark. They destroyed all lanterns as they went, and somehow one had drowned the fire by throwing mud at it. Here and there, blazes of light shone as Inquisitors smote the critters down, but more always took their place. A wizard tried to cast daylight, but as soon as he did, spiderlings rushed toward him and the man disappeared under a wave of black chitin. The spell fizzled out, and even his struggle was hidden from view. Priests and servants ran among the battle, adding to the confusion. People were tangled up in bundles of web, hidden beneath the wheels of the carts, and trying to help the Inquisitors by throwing pots and rocks at the spiders. Which hindered the Inquisitors more? It was a mess.
Wright must have sent an entire cluster against us.
Had it not been for the distraction of that wraith, they'd have easily pushed back the horned spiders. He reached a battle between two Inquisitors and two spider warriors. The men were powerful and well-trained, but they were Heligians with zero experience fighting horned spiders. One Inquisitor was already tied up in webbing, and the other's movements were sluggish from the paralyzing venom.
Smite!
Galio rushed in as the spiders readied to finish the job, thrusting his sword at the nearest creature's mouth between the mandibles. His golden blade crushed the spider's mandibles and roasted its brain. Smoke poured out of the critter's eyes as it screamed in agony, blue ichor flowing out of its mouth. The surviving creature roared and jumped at him, but Galio was ready. He stepped sideways while freeing his sword and flicked his wrist to launch a blindingly fast swipe that cut the spider's two front legs down. The spider warrior collapsed and fought for balance, trying to stab his horn in Galio's general direction to keep him away. It was useless. His sword had a longer range. He put the beast out of its misery. When he was done, chunks of grayish spider gore covered his sword and his shirt.
You two, come with me,
he told the stunned Inquisitors. Why were they looking at him like that? Killing a pair of horned spider warriors wasn't all that impressive. He helped the first man cut himself free of the webbing, though he lacked an antidote to help the other. The kid would have to trust his pledge of the faithful to cleanse the venom from his system. The three of them fought their way to the camp's center, where the fighting was heaviest and the grass was covered by writhing, men-sized bumps of webbing. A team of three Inquisitors on the offensive was a force to be reckoned with. Legs and mandibles slid away from Galio's golden carapace armor, and his divine-enhanced sword broke through chitin as if it weren't even there. The spiders retreated when he and the others neared, choosing to give ground instead of dying senselessly.
Just as well. Hold here!
Galio told the other two as they reached Master Enric's tent. Galio flapped open the entrance. Master Enric stood in front of an overturned table, with the corpse of a horned spider warrior laying on its back, legs still twitching. Enric's iron wand was in his hand, smoking from the tip. That wand possessed strange, powerful, destructive magic. A curious weapon, unlike anything else in Ivalice except perhaps some dwarven machines. No one was really sure where Enric had gotten it from.
Galio!
The man called as he saw the Inquisitor.
What the hell is going on? A dungeon lord is attacking, Galio said. I believe the one responsible for Hoya's wraith is behind this. The attack may be retribution for Yaroz's death, so he may look to capture you, Or he may be after our loot and the vampire's coffin. I'm certain we can beat the minions back, but we don't have enough men to ensure he fails at all his possible objectives. We need the heroes!
Enric waved a shaking hand at the stand by his bedroll toward the strange, boxy device he used to manipulate the heroes.
I've already sent a quest request, he explained. No one has answered yet, though. Few people are connected to the server. It's late at night back home. Let me update the request.
He hurried out from under the table and rushed for the device. With his back bent, his fingers flew, seemingly at random, smashing a series of buttons on the device's lower section.
The chance to loot a dungeon lord is sure to attract somebody, no matter the hour—
You do that,
Gallio said. He had no time to listen to the man prattle on.
I must go. The battle is far from over.
Looking out of the tent, he could see that two brave inquisitors had reached their war horses and had maneuvered right next to the riverbank. They stabbed at the spider warriors with long spears, pushing them away from the river and deep into the camp, which was more and more in inquisitorial control.
You cannot leave me alone!
Enric exclaimed, his eyes opening wide with panic.
I'm almost out of ammunition!
Gallio raised an eyebrow.
I won't leave you unguarded.
He stepped out of the tent and nodded at his small group.
Keep an eye on him. Make sure nothing comes close.
The men nodded, and Gallio hurried for the river where the two riders were keeping dozens of spiders at bay. With the horses' extra height, the spiders couldn't reach the riders. One critter launched a strand of web at the legs of a horse, but its rider calmly intercepted the shot with his spear. He waved his weapon around, shaking it free of most of the webbing, then charged at the spider and ran it through with a smite-empowered strike.
If we can keep the spiders away from the river, they won't have anywhere to retreat. They can't run into the forest without first going through us.
And Gallio certainly would make sure that didn't happen. Destroying the entire cluster would surely weaken Wright's forces.
Perhaps that will force him back into hiding.
Gallio smiled. Here he was, hoping against hope that this wouldn't end in tragedy. He reached the horses, which were tied to posts next to the carts. The nearby bushes shook with the breeze. 7 or 8 non-combatants hid nearby, watched over by a few young inquisitors. A servant girl gave Gallio a hopeful look, her fingers crossed in front of her chest as if in prayer.
Don't worry, those beloved by the light have nothing to fear,
he recited, almost mechanically. He hurried for the nearest horse and jumped on. Riding bareback was another thing that Ione and Alvedra had taught him, but fighting without proper stirrups was another thing entirely. His plan was to use the horse to traverse the battlefield, then dismount and reinforce the riders contesting the river while on foot. One rider used a cleave variant to swipe his spear across the line of spider warriors, severing fangs and legs in one fluid motion. The golden light of divine talents going off lit the scene like thunder strikes. The man straightened his back and roared a challenge as the horned critters were forced away from his spear. He looked like a hero straight out of myth, framed against the river while his features were lit by his defensive buffs. A proper servant of the light. Proud and unbeatable. The river exploded behind him, and a huge black shape the size of a warhorse fell over both rider and horse, its extremities extended hungrily like the fingers of a titan's hand breaking the water. The rider barely had time to turn and scream a curse as the spider queen fell over him like a shroud. His terrified horse tried to both jump and dash at the same time and only managed to propel the inquisitor down into the mud, which saved his life. The spider's legs closed around the panicking horse, and in a second the animal had disappeared, along with the spider, under the surface of the water. It had happened in the blink of an eye. Gallio, along with the rest of the non-combatants, had watched it all happen. The Inquisitor exchanged a glance with his horse. It was probably the adrenaline, but Gallio could have sworn there was a flash of intelligence in the beast's eye as it gave him a look impossible to mistake. It said, "Guess that good old Thumper wasn't all that beloved by the light, eh?"
"It's going to be a long night."
The second rider was, quite understandably, hurrying away from the river, while the first former rider scrambled away into the bushes, covered in mud. Gallio made a quick decision.
"Push them into the river!"
he ordered to anyone who would hear as he rode parallel toward the waters.
"Force them away from the tents!"
It'd probably be better for morale if his men thought the spiders were leaving because the Inquisitors forced them to, instead of that being the critter's plan all along. To add to his increasing lists of problems, he realized that Alvedra and the other lookouts were gone.
"They seen us,"
Voghord mumbled with horror.
"We must run, quick!"
In front of them, hidden by the foliage of the bushes, Inquisitor Gallio paced around the battlefield. He looked fearsome in his summoned armor, even if it was fading already. It only drew attention to the spider's remains that littered his body and sword. The Batblin's mounts clicked their mandibles and shifted in place, eager to challenge the Inquisitor and prove themselves fitter than their fallen brethren.
"Hold!"
Kleck told both Voghord and the spider warriors.
"If he'd spotted us, we'd be dead already."
Or perhaps not. He'd met Gallio, once, a long time ago. He didn't seem to Kleck like a cruel man. But Sheriff Gallio and Inquisitor Gallio could very well be different persons entirely, even if they shared a body. Just like Kleck's spider rider was a very different Batblin than Kleck the half-starved. The group waited, tension filling the space among them. There were 5 Batblins and a spider warrior for each. Kleck had hand-selected all members of his squadron for their bravery and discipline, which wasn't saying much given his starting pool of volunteers, but he worked with what he had. No one moved, and Gallio gave no signs of having seen them. Something was happening by the river. Gallio rode away, shouting angrily, to Kleck's relief.
"Good call,"
Tulip whispered at him.
"Now if my brave snack leader could figure out a way to get all those big snacks away from our objective."
She was referring to the pack of scared humans that were huddled close to the loot carts, as well as the guards protecting both them and the coffin that was Kleck's rider's main goal.
"We should smack them,"
exclaimed Strahdzark, waving his lanky arms in what he probably thought was a threatening manner.
"Pack tactics make us invincible. It's they who should be scared of Strahdzark."
"Oh, dear,"
said Saffron, Strahdzark's spider.
"Someone calm him down before he does something stupid. Please?"
"No fighting," Kleck said. "We're here for the coffin. That's all."
Besides, he very much doubted that the 10 of them could handle the guards without casualties, even if they overpowered 3 alert Inquisitors. No, the situation called for a more careful solution. Strahdzark let out a nasal whine and crossed his arms.
"Tulip, we need a distraction," Kleck said. "Can you get the spiderlings to help?"
"Ah, certainly,"
Tulip purred. She bent her legs and clicked and clacked at the grass, using the particular spider language that all warriors learned in their youth. The horned spider's bloodthirsty nature was still alien to most Batblins. It was the hardest part about getting the rider units to work. Kleck and Tulip had bonded during the haunt's defense. They had fought together and knew that they could trust one another. The others hadn't had the time to build a similar link. They worked together on Lord Edward and Kleck's wishes, but nothing else. Perhaps that would change tonight. The wait didn't last long. Kleck's echolocation gave him an excellent view as the first guard scratched his back, distractedly at first, and then with increasing alarm. Another guard gave him a confused glance 1 second before realizing spiderlings were crawling all over their bodies. He screamed as he dusted the spiders off in a rage, but more took their place. Soon, both men were dancing, trying to keep more spiders from climbing on. An instant later, the remaining guard and the unarmed humans followed suit. One lanky man in a tattered tunic even broke and ran away, flapping his arms and yelling in horror for help. In the distance, fireball runes went off and off, over and over.
"Now is our chance," Kleck said. "Quick, while they're distracted!"
The riders and their mounts snuck out of the bushes and headed for the cover of the carts, using the wheels to hide themselves from view. Not that anyone was looking their way anymore. Screams filled the night. Near the river, the Inquisitors slowly pushed the warriors toward the river. Kleck undid the knots tying the tarp that hid the cart's contents and pushed the heavy fabric away to reveal cramped boxes and rolls of fabric, packs of weaponry tied together, ornamental pieces of armor, and wooden boxes engraved with precious gemstones.
Get anything valuable, but leave the heavy trinkets,
Tulip ordered while the rest of the Batblins rummaged through all the carts.
How do we know what is valuable and what isn't?
Lily asked, her mandibles clacking shyly.
All these human bottles look the same!
You leave that to me,
Horm told her as the Batblin pocketed a silver locket.
You find anything shiny, and I'll hold on to it for you.
Working together, the group piled the valuables over a tarp they spread on the ground. Clack gestured at Tulip to get her attention.
We need to secure the coffin!
Lead the way, my brave snack.
Both Spider and Ryder hurried for the coffin's tent. The guards were only a few paces away. One was rolling on the ground, and the other had torn his clothes away and frantically passed his hands back and forth across his body. He was covered in red, angry little bites.
It's a miracle they can still stand,
Tulip muttered.
That much poison could paralyze even a bear.
The coffin lay in wait inside the tent, secured by heavy silver chains. It was a black old box that must have been an impressive piece of artwork a long time ago. The paint had faded, leaving naked wood on its edges. Hollow spaces where gemstones had been engraved stared at Kleck like empty eye sockets. A silver family crest marked the oak lid. Kleck could have sworn that the temperature in the tent was colder than outside. He nervously reached the coffin, walking over several salt magical circles as he did so.
We just tripped 3 alarms,
Tulip warned him.
Those guards will be pissed once they have the presence of mind to realize we're here.
Hopefully we'll be gone by then.
Tulip webbed the coffin. Kleck split his attention between watching her work and keeping an eye on the confusion outside.
What now?
Tulip asked once she was done.
Now we wait for Lord Edward's drones.
Kleck waved over at the riders outside. Their spiders had webbed the tarp like Tulip had done with the coffin. Together, the 8 critters dragged the bundle to the tent by pulling on the ropes, grabbing only the sections of web that the spiders had taught them wouldn't stick. Once the 10 of them were reunited inside the tent, they stood around, nervously looking at Kleck, as if it was his fault the drones hadn't arrived yet.
They'll be here at any moment,
he assured them. Outside, the guards had dealt with the spiderlings and were nursing their wounds. Farther out, half of the spider warriors had entered the river. Gallio was nowhere to be found.
They're abandoning us,
Vogkord wailed, rubbing his hands together.
Don't you see, Kleck? We've lost the river! The spiders are retreating, so Lord Edward will leave us here!
Strahdzark and Horm exchanged nervous glances.
Calm down, idiot,
Rose told her rider.
You're making too much noise. People will hear.
She's right. Keep quiet,
sighed Saffron.
And my sisters are not running away. They're retreating on purpose.
You want Vogkord to think that?
Vogkord pointed an accusing finger at the spiders.
So Vogkord gets killed instead of you!
Kleck realized he was losing control of the situation. He opened his mouth, but Tulip spoke over him.
Keep talking and I'll web your mouth shut. How are we supposed to get you killed instead of us if we're right here with you, you dumb little...
The heroes are here,
Lily whispered, her voice quivering. Kleck's blood froze in his veins. The others kept arguing for a beat. Then silence spread among them in a flash.
What did you say?
Strahdzark asked. Kleck crossed the tent and reached Lily, who was stealing glances through a hole in the fabric. A summoning circle had appeared out of nowhere, red and gold lines of fire forming runes in midair, shining like angry stars, but hovering only 10 or so feet above the ground. The magic lines gyrated slowly while people cheered. The grass at the bottom was charred and smoking, and 3 humanoid figures stood in eerie calm at its center. One was a female elf wearing a white tunic under silver armor. Another was a male dwarf covered head to toe in heavy plate, and the last wore black leather armor and hid their face under a black cloak. They were armed with a mace, a tower shield, and an axe, and 2 curved swords, respectively. Their eyes lit up with red light as their bodies jerked to a measure of life. Kleck caught sight of blank-like features and a skin not unlike porcelain. The heroes moved. Next to Kleck, Lily shivered. He couldn't blame her. They were low-level critters caught in a heroic path. It wasn't hard to guess what happened next.
That's it,
Vogkord said quietly.
We're doomed.
This time, no one had any desire to contradict him. The heroes carved a path of destruction through the ranks of the remaining spider warriors.
You've got to be kidding me,
Ed said quietly, as his minions ran for the river or were destroyed.
I know those guys.
What?
Levy asked. Sweat covered her forehead, and she was completely out of spells.
You mean the heroes that are annihilating our forces?
Ed nodded. There was no mistaking them. The group had always liked to play the same roster of characters. Even if they died, they simply made them again.
The dwarf is a guardian called Shadow Zero. Mark Thompson plays him. The elf cleric is Layla Moonshine, played by Lisa Anders. The rogue is Rylan Silverblade. My former employer runs him. They are my old party.
Alder whistled.
They're incredible.
Ed's former group moved with mechanic precision, dealing with pockets of spider resistance one at a time. Lisa's cleric's fast cleansings kept their movements unhindered by web, while the rogue disappeared into the shadows and reappeared an instant later to sneak attack Perrine's princesses and royal guard. Mark's guardian ran through the battlefield with the grace of a boulder, drawing aggro as attacks bounced off his meteoric plate armor. It was so different watching them from afar. They looked nothing like the outdated graphics of Ivalice Online. A chill ran through his back.
All this time, that's what people watched when I ran with my party.
That's what Kael Arpidel had faced. Unfeeling humanoid creatures built for killing, culling living beings without mercy or hesitation. He focused on his drones and the tunnel they were digging. They were so close to Kleck and the Riders. But the hero's path was right in their way. He willed his drones to speed up, his urgency flowing like electricity between the mental link with them. They were already going as fast as they could, though.
Isn't that too much of a coincidence?
Kes asked, rubbing her chin.
It has to be some kind of trick. All the heroes around and you run into your old party?
Ed shrugged.
Io's player base was already low when I arrived in this world.
For all the procedurally generated content, Io had many failings that other games in the genre lacked. Spotty servers, buggy advancement, a bitch of a difficulty curve, a non-existent tutorial, and many others. Its players, like Ed, had stayed because they enjoyed the plot and the small, but dedicated, community that had grown around the obscure game.
Most people played in Halagese. We knew it as the Light Kingdom, though. The four of us liked to play in Staravos because it was the least populated area, so we had more experience points to ourselves.
I guess they never left. This was bound to happen, Ed thought.
It was as if he was caught in the middle of a train wreck, his old life colliding with the new.
Can you just tell them that it's you?
Alder asked.
Let them know what happened? Get them to help?
Yeah. That will not work.
Ed and Ryan, his ex-boss at Laser Shark, hadn't left on the best of terms. Mostly because Ed had smashed the other guy's face into his own desk before quitting the job. On one hand, Ryan had had it coming. On the other, Ed doubted the face-bashing had helped Ryan see the error of his ways. Perhaps if he could separate Mark and Lisa, he could talk to them.
Not that it'd do much to help.
First of all, they'll probably attack us on sight without reading our chat. Even if they listen, the militant church controls the interface. There's nothing stopping their sysadmin from simply changing the text to a copy-pasted evil speech.
A thought tore across his brain like an arrow.
How many did I kill while they were begging for mercy?
His throat dried in his mouth.
So, we're right where we started.
Levy said with a heavy sigh. Nearby, an owl screamed into the night. Kes drew her sword and readied her shield.
Not exactly, Levy. Get behind me. We got incoming.
A surge of adrenaline buried Ed's worries in some vault in his head. He'd deal with them later. He drew his sword and readied himself to activate his talents. Alder did the same, hurrying to his side, with Kes guarding the other. The four of them were alone in the clearing. Somewhere in the foliage behind them, Eye Gouger and the other mounts balked angrily. The owl screamed again. Three short warnings.
"We're running out of time,"
Kes said. A woman came from the tree line in front of them.
How did she get so close without anyone hearing her?
Even the warnings had come with barely seconds of leeway. This mystery, at least, was solved when the Inquisitor strolled into view, her bow drawn and an explosive arrow knocked. A ranger, skilled in tracking and moving silently through the forest. Ed had fought with this particular ranger before, a long time ago. Alvedra had changed since then. Her face was fuller, and she had more muscle on her body. An extra couple ranks of endurance and one of brawn, probably. Her hair was cropped short, her heart-shaped face shared the tan of a full-blooded Sterevosi, and her high cheekbones and sharp chin could have made her Ione or Nikolai's cousin.
"Oh, time certainly run out for you,"
said Alvedra, flashing a smile full of teeth.
"They're coming this way! I'm sure we can take them,"
said Strahdzark, not really sounding that sure of himself.
"Let them come,"
said Rose through an angry hiss.
"I'm ready."
Tulip turned to her sister with a click of mandibles that was the spider equivalent of an eye roll.
"Then you deal with them, dear."
She faced Kleck, who was in the middle of the tent, staring at the floor with a distant expression.
"Snap! We need to leave while we still can. The drones aren't coming. Perhaps we can sneak out through the forest if we're very lucky. But staying here is not an option."
Vogkord nodded.
"She's right, Kleck. We've no chance against them."
"We can't leave," Kleck muttered.
"The Haunt is counting on us."
"The Haunt doesn't pay us enough to die for it,"
Horm exclaimed. Kleck turned his small hands into fists.
"They'll be here,"
he said, with a finality to his voice that admitted no further discussion.
"I know it."
Outside, the sound of battle was fading. It was a strange paradox. The heroes had unleashed a cacophony to the battlefield that had quickly turned into a deathly silence. They made no noise, no war cries. They didn't even call out their spells.
"It's like they're barely paying attention to us while they kill us."
"Kleck,"
Tulip said.
"Guards are approaching. If we don't leave now, we're dead."
"Look," Kleck said. "Anyone that wants to leave could do it. But every minion that fought outside is gone or dead. This is the safest spot in the entire camp, so make your call."
"Ogba, save us,"
said Vogkord sadly.
"I knew I should have listened to my mate."
A strong breeze reached the tent and made the entrance flap and flutter. Despite himself, Kleck jumped like everyone else. Someone squealed. The ground above Kleck's feet began to shake. Acting by reflex, Kleck jumped away barely in time. The ground collapsed and became a ramp as it fell with a heavy thud. A dirty drone in a purple and pink tunic stood atop it. It had a yellow mining hat with a shard of magical torch at its front. It regarded the stunned riders and their mounts with a disapproving look, then gestured at the cart behind him, which was connected to the stone floor by a strange iron line that extended beyond Kleck's view. With a dignity that befitted the adventurer slayer, Kleck patted himself clean of most dust. With little success.
"Right,"
he said.
"What are you waiting for?"
he asked his crew.
"Get to work! Secure the loot to the cart so we can do what we do best!"
One by one, the crew overcame their surprise. The spiders pulled the coffin and the bag of loot toward the cart while the riders secured it. Outside, it was quiet enough that Kleck could make out the sound of voices heading their way. Tulip reached his side while the others worked.
"Turns out you were right again. Tell me, brave Snack, what is it that we do best?"
Kleck gave her his best confident smile.
"Running for our lives. We have no equal at that."
The horned spider chuckled darkly.
"Elita's tit,"
Alder whispered. He turned to Kes, his eyes wide.
"The
That's Alvedra!
I can see that,
Kes said sharply. She was pale, the muscles in her arms taut with tension.
Alvedra, what are you doing here?
She asked the ranger.
And what the hell have you done to your character sheet?
Ed activated his evil eye and stole a quick glance. Alvedra, human inquisitor. Experience, 275. Unused, 15. Brawn, 12. Agility, 13. Endurance, 12. Spirit, 12. Mind, 12. Charm, 12. Skills. Archery. Improved, 4. Tracking. Improved, 1. Religion. Basic, 7. Talents. Explosive arrow. Smite. Pass without trace. Pact of the Faithful. The ranger's talents were all over the place.
She's become an inquisitor?
Last time Ed had seen the ranger, she'd suffered an allergic reaction to spider venom in the middle of a battle against Queen Amphorus. Kes had saved the ranger by making a pact with what she thought was an evil dungeon lord who had tricked them into trusting him. With time, as they had gotten to know each other, Kes had come around. Now she was one of his most trusted friends. Alvedra, though, she hadn't been there for that part. Only for the betrayal.
I could ask you the same damn thing, minion.
Alvedra gave the word such a dark emphasis that Kes involuntarily took a step back. The Inquisitor turned to Ed.
So, this is what you really look like, Dungeon Lord. The armor and cape suits you better than your scrawny adventurer disguise, I'll admit. Your pet Batlin is missing, though. Yes, how different things are. And my, that's such a huge experience gain you're sporting, Kes. I wonder how many innocents you had to kill for it.
You have no idea what you're talking about,
Kes said.
Is that so? Correct me where I'm wrong, then. You became a Dungeon Lord's minion and helped him raise Barova and kill Ione and all the others. Last winter, you and he tried to release a sentient wraith into Constantina, but failed. So, you rallied more Dungeon Lords into Staravos, then built a base here. And now you're raiding the goddamn militant church!
Oh, come the fuck on,
Levy muttered. She was inching for the bushes towards Scar and the other hell chickens. Alder frowned and lowered his sword.
At least you got two of those right, Al.
Kes glared at him.
Alder, don't.
She glanced back near Ed and raised her fist without making eye contact.
I deal with her on my own, understand?
Got it,
Ed said, trying to appear nonchalant. Kleck and the riders were running for their lives inside the tunnel while the drones collapsed it as they passed.
We really don't have time for this.
I hope you're better at dealing with me than you were at securing this clearing,
Alvedra told her. Everything about her demeanor just oozed fury.
It was trivial to sneak here undetected, and now I've got your dungeon lord surrounded, Kes. It's over. A single gesture and he dies. Your reign of terror ends tonight, and by Alita's grace, it'll be by my hand. Are you even listening?
Kes shook her head and didn't finish her sentence. Her hands clenched her sword so tightly her knuckles were white.
Look, we didn't summon the wraith. We killed it. And I don't know what Gallio told you, but we didn't burn Barova. Ione did, and we stopped him.
Alvedra loosed her arrow. Ed's eyes flashed green, and the arrow exploded midair in a puff of smoke. Levy yelped and jumped back a step. No one else acknowledged the attack. Kes didn't even blink.
I'll kill you for speaking like that of Ione,
Alvedra said.
He was a hero, and he died defending the village from a dungeon lord's attack, like you should have done. You say that's a lie. Am I wrong in saying you're his minion, then? Do you deny it?
Kes shook her head.
No, I don't deny it.
Ed wanted to clutch his head and scream his frustration away. Kes couldn't tell her the whole truth, because doing so would be admitting the Mind Brood's existence. To an Inquisitor at that. And then Hoya, Undercity, and every village in the vicinity would get purged by holy fire.
He had stumbled into a situation that could be resolved by all parties involved calming down, drinking tea, and talking for a while. But they couldn't do it. And Kes knew it.
So, the one truth you can't twist is the one you own. Yet you expect me to believe all the others you can't prove.
She grabbed a small metal piece she carried on a necklace. An arrowhead.
I found this in Barova's ashes. It's Ione's. When you're gone, I'll bury you with it, so we can find you in the afterlife. We'll let him decide if you're worth forgiving.
Go fuck yourself,
Kes said quietly.
Your new friends are no saints, you know. If you want someone to blame, it's them. They go killing anyone who won't bend a knee to Alita. And when we dare defend ourselves, you scream to the Evans as if we were the ones burning entire villages down.
Alvedra let go of her necklace and knocked another arrow.
The militant church gave me a home after I lost mine. They nursed me to health. They gave me purpose, taught me how to hone my hatred into a weapon of good so that I could stop massacres like those from ever happening again.
She paused, and her face was distant for a second.
I won't fail them, Kes. There's only one thing I need to know. One thing I keep asking myself. Because, you see, I thought I knew you. That you weren't one to fall for the sweet lies of a servant of the dark. What did he offer you in the first place? Was it riches? Women? Your homeland taking you back?
Alvedra shook her head, although Kes's expression didn't change.
No. Tempting, but not enough to fuel such a betrayal. It has to be something deeper. The true wish of your heart.
For an instant, Ed's gaze met with the Inquisitor. He didn't like what he saw there.
He offered your wings back, didn't he? He told you he'd make you fly again. And then you sold your soul and did everything he asked of you. Like the good whore you are!
Kes drew a breath as if someone had stabbed her. Ed knew that Alvedra had unearthed Kes's greatest pain. Something very intimate that Kes had shared with her in a way she hadn't with him or anyone else. Alvedra had paid back Kes's perceived betrayal in the same coin. The marshal raised her head. She just looked tired. Very much so. The vivid image of a person with no more fucks to give. She sighed and said,
Okay.
Then she raised her shield, aimed the tip of her sword at the Inquisitor's neck, and advanced.
Now!
Alvedra said immediately, entering a defensive stance.
Get them now!
She stared at the trees. Kes stopped and looked around, her shield covering her face. Nothing happened. Alvedra cursed in Staravosi and drew her bowstring.
Explosive!
Something red-feathered struck her neck. Her arrow went wide and disappeared into the underbrush. The Inquisitor blinked and reached for a small bamboo shaft protruding from her neck. She blinked again as she removed it to reveal a small syringe attached to the shaft.
What?
The surrounding trees shook, and five tall Kufdar jumped down from the branches above. The spotted furs under their leather armor shook with the breeze.
Bet you didn't see that one coming,
Kaga said, barking a laugh.
Not such a good infiltrator after all, am I right?
Right you are, boss,
Yumiya said, flashing a grin of yellowed canines.
Kaftar!
Alvedra reached for another arrow, but her hand missed its mark somehow.
What have you done to my men?
She seemed to have trouble standing.
Sleeping draft,
Kaga said, pretending he didn't see Kes's furious scowl.
They're having such sweet dreams. You should join them.
A poison? Ignorant barbarian? I'm an inquisitor. My faith shall burn through your silly juice in an instant.
Sure, Kaga shrugged. But that draft is my great-uncle's personal recipe. He used to hunt were-alligators all over the misty swamps of the distant south, near the wetland frontier.
The Kufdar had a nostalgic glint to his eye.
Those were the days. That draft would put any were-gator to sleep, force them to revert back to normal. If your faith can burn through it, Maybe people should pray to you instead of the light, young lady.
As he spoke, he and Yumiya calmly strolled for the Inquisitor, with the remaining Kuftar hanging back outside the clearing. Alvidra's entire body was tense with raw effort as she forced herself forward on willpower alone, step by step.
Blasphemous, ignorant fool! You won't stop me from having my revenge!
With a trembling hand, she grabbed an arrow and knocked it,